Dearly beloved, we're gathered here today to get through this thing called life. How to do it is a great, grand, and noble experiment, given our human predicament, for we are dreams and bones. How shall we be unique, known for our worth and our dignity to one another, and yet part of an interdependent web of all existence of which we are, belonging and beloved? How shall we meet the seeming contradictions of our daily lives, of our human communities, of our yearning for justice and peace in a world tearing at our hearts and our souls? Unitarian Universalism is a grand experiment in finding ways, one way of many ways. We extend our hands across the world, for our aspirations say that as a people of faith grounded in our principles, we cultivate lives of meaning and reverence and depth. We create sanctuary where all hands are held, and together we act toward justice, healing, and sustainability. We've been thinking each month about each one of those concepts and how shall we be a sanctuary where all hands are held, in part by opening our religious imaginations and our compassionate hearts to holding hands around the world with all those who find Unitarians and Universalists in their philosophical traditions. The International Council of Unitarians and Universalists has a wonderful reflection from Jorge Espinel. 2 years ago, he says, a 15-year-old boy, Sergio Erego, took a picture of himself kissing his boyfriend. One of his teachers found the photo, shared it with the leadership of the school, which triggered a formal investigation, because a kiss of two people of the same sex was against the, quote, moral and religious principles of the institution. What started as a simple kiss ended up in a tragedy a few months after. Exhausted from being persecuted, Sergio committed suicide. My experience in the Colombian Unitarian Universalist context has shown me that there are other Sergios out there, and that most often the only religion people know is more interested in defending beliefs and dogmas than in protecting and nurturing the worth and dignity of every individual. What saddens me the most is that minorities such as the LGBTQ community tend to associate the word religion with exclusion and intolerance. They just don't know there are alternatives. They do not know that we exist. With 400 million Spanish speakers in the world, this is a task that requires strong allies. The UU Latino Ministry started out as an initiative of our church, of the larger fellowship, and was joined by the International Council of Unitarians and Universalists and the International Office of the Unitarian Universalist Association. We are creating strong networks throughout the Spanish-speaking world. We are creating strong networks throughout the world to stand for our principles. I'll invite Jane Wagner to join me. We'll think about where some of those presences are.
Austria.
Denmark.
Germany.
Argentina.
Australian and New Zealand Unitarian Universalist Association.
Bolivia.
Brazil.
Burundi.
Canada.
Colombia.
Czech Republic.
The European Unitarian Universalist Association.
Finland.
France.
Hong Kong.
Hungary.
India.
Indonesia.
Japan.
Kenya.
Mexico.
The Netherlands.
Nigeria.
Norway.
Philippines.
Puerto Rico.
Romania.
Rwanda.
South Africa.
Spain.
Uganda.
United Kingdom.
USA.
Jane, tell us a story of visiting one of those places.
Several years ago, I went on a pilgrimage to Transylvania to visit some of the old Unitarian churches there. And one of the significant experiences I had was at communion in the church. It was a church that was many centuries old, and the priest, they call them priests there, had a huge bowl as big as this, full of cubes of bread. The bread had come from the village bakery where we had watched them bake bread the day before, an open-air wood baking oven in the middle of the village. And the priest and his assistant came to the center of the circle, and then the congregation came forward in groups. They followed the old tradition of men and women on separate sides. And so the older men came, and then the younger men came, and then the older women, and then the younger women. And the priest carried that bowl, and the assistant had the chalice that was 500 years old at least. It was a beautiful thing. And our guide had explained to us ahead of time that this was not about the typical Christian communion. It had nothing to do with the body and blood of Christ, thank heavens, because I wouldn't have wanted to do that. But but it was about community. And as the priest handed each of us the cube of bread, he looked in our eye just for a second. And when he handed the chalice, he looked in our eye just for a second. And it was a profound experience of community. I didn't know what they were talking about. I don't speak Hungarian. But that was the deepest connection that I've experienced in my life. It was a wonderful communion.
Says everyone. Well, gathering here today to get through this thing called life might have many different solutions. Solving this dilemma with experiment and goodwill finds that Unitarians and Universalists express a deep and committed common faith in many different ways, through communion, through chanting devotional songs, through hymns, through sermons, seated on the floor in circles, through faith healing, through church, through house-based gatherings, traveling to conferences, and, as we shall see later, in partnerships among unlikely brothers and sisters. The Francophone East African Coalition is supporting developing groups in Burundi and Rwanda and the Congo in Brazzaville. Unfortunately, in Burundi, violence has escalated, with government forces killing civilians, leaving the bodies in the streets to further terrorize people. The still active charges against the leader of the Burundi Unitarians, whose words you heard as our chalice lighting, are now being used to seek and arrest and intimidate lawyers and those of other faiths who have been of assistance to Unitarians. So Burundi Unitarians, for standing up for equality and equal rights for all peoples, particularly LGBTQ peoples, are being forced to join the multitudes fleeing the country for personal safety. Fulgence himself was forced to flee to another African country and is now safely in Montreal. Assistance is being offered to all our congregations in Burundi who need to leave, and also those who are sheltering in place. Money and spiritual support through the Francophone East African Coalition, our brothers and sisters living their Unitarian Universalist faith in Burundi. As you heard, many of us have visited in Hungary and on the border between Hungary and Romania, some 25,000 Unitarians going back to 1568 continue to celebrate in the style that Jane shared with us. The Unitarian Church in Denmark was founded in 1900. It was originally centered, they say, around the teachings of Jesus, God the Father, and the Golden Rule as love thy neighbor. And today most members prefer, they say, a more abstract theology. Don't you love that? And many of the services contain few of the traditional Christian elements because the aim is to bring religious, philosophical, and scientific views into agreement. The Unitarian Universalists of Hong Kong have three groups within their one umbrella. There's a Buddhist Sangha, a humanist group, and a progressive Christian fellowship. In the United Kingdom, there are 170 member congregations, and they date their philosophy back as far as the 15th century. We heard of the church in the Philippines. Germany has a Christian Unitarian wing and also a humanist one. And in India, the Khalsi Hills have a particularly indigenous group of people. So I will read from their self-report to the International Council of Unitarian Universalists. Like the orchids that grow plentifully in the area, Unitarianism has found favorable conditions for germination in the Khasi Hills. Within a radius of 50 miles of the highlands of northeast India live 98%, over 9,000 people of the country's Unitarians. There is a small but important community of Tamil Unitarians in the former Madras, now Chennai, India. The Khasi Hills traces its history back to 1795. A particular coming together began with Hajom Kisora Singh, who was born in 1865 to an indigenous traditional religion within the Khasi Hills. And he joined a Reformed Christian movement taught by Welsh missionaries. And then he learned to read and read the Bible. Drawing on traditions from both Christian and tribal religions, he formed what he called a new religion. He called it the religion of one God, Kaniyam Mana Webli. Khasi culture and religion is an interesting climate for a new religion to take root in. Orchids in the Khasi Hills grow on trees, mossy rocks, and on the ground, getting the nutrients they need to thrive in a variety of different ways, from the soil, from insects, from decaying leaves that fall among the root masses, and the same might be said of the development of Unitarianism in the Khasi Hills. Singh's new religion thrived by taking nutrients from tribal customs and Christianity. He maintained a core of Khasi traditional belief systems, including a covenant that each person agreed to, in which they followed a code of clan behavior in personal, family, clan, and tribal matters, omitting beliefs and practices such as the reading of omens and animal sacrifice. Singh's Religion of One God provided many Christian elements in Khasi religion as it had been practiced. There were churches, a liturgy, Sunday services, and group worship. And yet the new religion was neither tribal nor Calvinistic, just as the orchid and its nutrient sources are simply not the same. Due to the seed of free inquiry and reason, Singh's religion blossomed into a flower quite separate from its hosts. When he was in his early 20s, Singh learned from a Brahmo convert that he was not alone in his belief in one beneficent God. Brahmo Samaj, a purely intellectual wing of Unitarian Christianity, had flourished using inspiration and conversation with the Unitarian Christianity of the 1840s, as written by William Ellery Channing. And a descendant, intellectual descendant of that, spoke with Singh. That was Yop Salomon, because there had been Unitarian conversations flourishing that Singh immediately felt akin to. He discovered Unitarianism, and he therefore named his new faith the Unitarian religion, Ka Niyam Unitarian. He did not immediately start a society, but as would have been the indigenous tradition, he began by gathering friends into his home for religious discussion. Today, the Khasi and Janita Hills Unitarian Union includes 32 congregations with growing membership of beyond those 9,000 people. It's quite a land of orchids. Almost all these churches maintain non-sectarian pre-primary schools for children in the villages. There's a quarterly newsletter, and there is an international youth conference to which the youth belong and continue to return to on a rotating basis as part of the International Council of Unitarian Universalists. All of these congregations know of one another through the magic of the internet and are strengthening their relationships because we have no creed or dogma. What we have is the quality of our relationships. We have covenantal conversations, which we model here at the congregational level by remembering and helping one another remember and returning continually to the covenantal conversations which hold up our highest and deepest aspirations with the most compassion and love. And so covenantal conversations spread from within the congregation to between congregations, even though practices and beliefs, languages and customs are so very different. The commitment is to the quality of relationships. That leads us inevitably into a life which seeks justice. As Rachel Remen, medical doctor, she wrote, Kitchen Table Wisdom writes about the inevitability of justice arising from covenantal relationships. She says, we are led into service through our relationships. Service is not the same, she says, as helping. Helping is based on inequality. It's not a relationship between equals. When you help, you use your strength to help someone else with less strength. It's a one-up, one-down relationship, and people feel this inequality. When we help, we may inadvertently take away more than we give, diminishing the person's sense of self-worth and self-esteem. Serving is also different to fixing. We fix broken pipes, we don't fix people. When I said about fixing another person, it's because I see them as broken. Fixing is a form of judgment that separates us from one another. It creates a distance. So fundamentally, helping, fixing, and serving are ways of seeing life. When you help, you see life as weak. When you fix, you see life as broken. When you serve, you see life as whole. When we serve in this way, we understand that anyone's suffering is also our own suffering, that their joy is also my joy. We may help or fix many things in our lives, but when we are serving, we are always in the service of wholeness. We bespeak our belonging to wholeness, our commitment to belonging,